And this is KDNK Carbondale. It is 7:41. It's time for your KDNK local newscast for this Friday morning, March 24th. I'm Steve Cole, live from the heart of Carbondale's Creative District. At the 2017 Colorado Broadcasters Awards ceremony, KDNK placed second in the state for best regularly scheduled newscast. If you tuned into KDNK's Journalism Roundtable during the membership drive, you heard New Post Independent feature reporter Carla Jean Whitley in her first appearance on the radio station. She told us about her coverage of the Glenwood Historical Society purchasing a Remington Derringer gun believed to be the property of Doc Holliday at the time of his death in Glenwood at 1866. Well, since the purchase of the gun earlier this month, new information has cast doubt on the story and the weapon's origins, according to a new article in the paper. The Society's board met Tuesday night to discuss next steps. They are hoping to find more information and will enlist a gun expert to examine the antique. Since the gun's purchase, the Society received $600 toward the loan's repayment. Executive Director Bill Kite invites those with questions regarding their own donations to call the Society. Meanwhile, the newspaper itself issued an apology for its recommendation that readers support the Glenwood Historical Society with donations. Will continue to follow the story. Yesterday, the Colorado Court of Appeals in a 2-1 decision reversed an order by the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission denying a youth-brought petition against fracking. The court found that the commission erred in its interpretation of Colorado law and remanded the case back to a lower district court. The six plaintiffs in the case are members of the Boulder-based nonprofit youth group Earth Guardians. They hand-delivered their petition for a rulemaking on fracking to COGCC back in November of 2013. They asked the commission to stop the permitting of fracking until it can be done without causing harm to humans and impairing other natural resources in the state. Now the youth climate activists and the oil industry group will head back to district court. In a time of strong polarization between the nation's political parties, there is one issue that a strong majority of Coloradans agree on: hunger. Eric Galatis has more.
A broad majority of Colorado voters want stronger, smarter programs to eradicate hunger, according to a new poll commissioned by Hunger Free Colorado. Over half of people surveyed said they would be more likely to vote for a candidate who prioritizes food security programs. Benjamin Coopersmith, whose firm conducted the research, says despite widespread political polarization generally, voters are remarkably united on addressing hunger.
Across the board, Colorado voters want to see programs that address hunger and are very comfortable seeing their tax dollars used for those programs if those programs are run well and are proven to work.
Coopersmith says the findings suggest people across the political spectrum recognize that many working people still struggle to make ends meet. Nearly two-thirds of voters say food stamps should be increased or left where they are today, and 3 out of 4 people surveyed say the current benefits are too low. Coopersmith says while social programs continue to be popular with registered Democrats, a majority of Republicans are also in favor of increasing support for programs that address hunger.
Our survey shows support for Republicans for maintaining or increasing food stamps, and it shows that 64% of Republicans would be willing to see an increase in that $1.38 per person per meal benefit.
Coopersmith notes while charities and churches are essential to efforts to end hunger, the idea that a majority want the government to pull back services was not borne out in the survey's results. He adds, addressing hunger is not just a Front Range issue.
Voters are more conservative in rural Colorado along many dimensions, but when it comes to hunger specifically, they understand and support a strong role for government.
The research also found two-thirds of voters oppose federal cuts to programs like food stamps and subsidized school meals, and 5 in 9 say government should be working alongside community-based organizations to make sure no one goes hungry in Colorado. For KDNK, I'm Eric Galatis.
The downtown market in Glenwood Springs is going on hiatus this summer, but this week the Post-Independent's Ryan Summerlin reported that there will be a new farmer's market at a new location on Tuesdays. Gavin Dahl spoke to Ryan Summerlin for this week's news brief.
Ryan Summerlin is Quartz, Carbondale, and County reporter for the Glenwood Springs Post-Independent. Thanks for being back on Community Radio KDNK, Ryan.
Hi, thanks for having me, Gavin.
So first of all, the downtown market is taking a year off, but the founder says they still plan to reopen in the summer of 2018 after the bridge work is complete. The new effort is not affiliated with the old market in any way. What's the backstory regarding the existing market taking this year off?
the market that did exist here in downtown. It was called the Downtown Market. It needed to look for a new location due to concerns from the Grand Avenue Bridge construction. And initially, they were looking at Axtell Park, which is just a few blocks south on 11th and Cooper. But that ended up falling through because of some resistance from neighbors in that area. And that led to the decision to just take a break for the summer.
Why do you think the established downtown market has expressed disappointment that another entity is keeping the farmers market effort going?
Well, it seemed like a pretty simple, straightforward story to begin with. I mean, you have this news that the downtown market is going to take a break, and then we got a tip saying that the market's back on and it's going to be in Sayre Park, same times on Tuesdays as the old farmers market was, just different location, but otherwise same time. Going to move it, and maybe it was going to be a different organization. It seemed like a pretty straightforward, this market is not going to be happening, so, you know, we want the town to have a market, and we're going to have it over in Sayre Park. And it really wasn't until, of course, deadline that day that I get a call from a board member and founder of the downtown market, the original market, saying, no, we're not associated with this in any way, and it's actually kind of upsetting that they're going to be putting that on, and more importantly, that the city of Glenwood Springs is offering them support through, I should say, applying for $20,000 in city money.
Roaring Fork Events held their inaugural Wild West Fermentation Fest last year. Who are these folks?
Emily and Damon Arredondo. Their organization has been around only for about a year now, but they've put on a couple of big events. Like you said, the Fermentation Fest, and they also did the Capitol Christmas Tree here in Glenwood Springs. And then, of course, you know, taking on this new farmers market for the summer is going to be a big step for them as well.
And so are they going to be inviting vendors who have traditionally been part of the downtown market to participate in this new farmers market?
Yes, Emily said that they are looking to reach out to all the same vendors, largely mimicking what the original farmers market was. Again, just in a different location. Same vendors and, you know, with some extra stuff, like they're hoping to get a beer garden going in Sayre Park for those events.
So when will the new Glenwood Tuesday farmers market kick off?
So that's going to start in June. That's going to be June 13th, running until September 5th. So it's a little bit shorter than the original market, about 3 weeks shorter.
But one more example of some fun cultural stuff happening in Glenwood this summer.
Having the downtown farmers market, personally, I loved it because it's right outside of the Post Independence back door. So on Tuesdays, you know, I could just walk right back there. So, you know, I was, just like everybody else, I was disappointed with seeing it go away. But yeah, it's having a farmers market here is a really big deal in the summer.
Ryan Summerlin, Post Independent reporter, thanks so much for being back on KD&K.
All right, thanks a lot, Gavin.
And we will link to Ryan Summerlin's article on our website, kdnk.org. Garfield County has approved an amendment to its land use and development code that could lead to more tiny homes on unincorporated county land. The existing square footage requirement in the code had been a minimum of 20 feet by 20 feet. Tiny homes are typically 500 square feet or less. Tiny homes can be placed on a fixed foundation. However, Garfield County restricts tiny homes on wheels to RV parks. The hope is that tiny homes can help address the need for affordable housing. Next up, Gavin Dahl has some news updates about cannabis.
Here's the latest news on marijuana, thanks to Denver Post team at The Cannabist. A Colorado House committee voted 8-3 this week to approve a new bill giving local governments a path to allowing private marijuana clubs. The clubs could allow indoor smoking if they only have one or two employees. The bill already passed out of the Republican-controlled Senate, thanks to Republican supporters whose aim is to keep weed smoking out of parks and other public spaces. But Democratic Governor John Hickenlooper, who was opposed to legalization for years and only embraced creating the state's regulatory framework once he was forced to by a popular vote, reportedly opposes the effort. Meanwhile, there was one big warning that opponents of marijuana kept repeating over and over that has now been proven false. Drug warriors have long claimed, without evidence, that legalization will cause a spike in use of cannabis among teenagers. A new survey of 37,000 middle and high school students carried out by Washington State has found that marijuana legalization has had no effect on the use of the drug by teens. The Washington State Healthy Youth Survey found that the 2016 rate of marijuana use was basically unchanged since 2012, the year state voters approved recreational sales of ganja. This data from a state agency is important because drug warriors continue to push this false narrative. Why are there so many conflicting marijuana studies? Researchers in Philadelphia at Einstein Medical Center recently published a study showing cannabis use increases your risk of stroke by 26% and heart failure by 10%, while they caveat that, quote, the side effects shouldn't preclude it from being legalized or prescribed, the findings directly contradict a number of other recent studies on the same subject. One doctor told the Washington Post, quote, there's not great infrastructure in place for us to study cannabis well, because in part, it remains illegal at the federal level. New U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions, an old-fashioned drug warrior who famously said he used to be a fan of the KKK until he learned they smoke grass, will most certainly impact fledgling medical research and the recreational industry that more and more states are benefiting from. Republican Congressman Mike Kaufman, who represents a large district east of Denver, says he's prepared to fight for Colorado's right. Meanwhile, Democratic Congressman Jared Polis has formed a cannabis caucus in Washington, D.C. When KDNK's Amy Haddon Marsh asked our own Congressman Scott Tipton earlier this month if he supports the efforts of the caucus, he said he was unfamiliar with it. For KDNK, I'm Gavin Dahl.